All right, let me read you a little bit more of this on the adoption question, okay?
Do you want to turn it back on.
A little bit more of this on the adoption question. So here's what Asher Norman says regarding the adoption answer. Yeah, I turned the recorder on. Right. It says, there's no indication in the Gospels that Joseph ever adopted Jesus under Jewish law. Although under Jewish law, certain family and tribal affiliations must be through the birth father and cannot be claimed by adoption. For example, if a Jewish priest, a Kohen, has a male child, he has the status of priest by birthright. However, if he adopts a child whose birth father was not a Kohen, the child does not have the status of a priest like his adoptive father. Since Joseph was not Jesus' birth father, there is no evidence in the Gospels that Jesus was from the house of David, which cannot be conferred through adoption under Jewish law. This eliminates Jesus from messianic consideration. I really don't know how to answer that, is what I'm saying. So the virgin birth presents a difficulty. It does present a difficulty, but it was not a difficulty for Matthew, and it was not a difficulty for Luke, the only two guys in the Bible to tell us about the virgin birth in the first place. Yes, no, that's absolutely correct. There's several statements throughout Jewish literature that talk about David's suspect paternity. Yeah, so David's paternity in the Midrash is suspect, and that's why Jesse doesn't summon him from the field when Samuel says, bring your sons before me, because Jesse didn't consider him his son. And so then when it says in the Psalms, this is the stone the builders rejected, it has become the chief cornerstone. The builders are referred to as the Davidic family, or the family of Jesse. The stone is, this is all in the Midrash, the stone that's rejected is David, who is rejected because of his suspect paternity. But it all turned out good in the end, and David's paternity was actually legitimate through an amazing story.
Perfect.
Yeah. So, no, it is. There's definitely precedent in this. We've seen this before, and Rabbi Lichtenstein points this out in his commentary on Matthew. He points out that it says right in the Talmud that the house of David had. The house of David had lizards hanging from its back, it's an idiom like we would say skeletons in the closet. You know, the house of David had lots of skeletons in the closet. We're not going to resolve this virgin birth issue. I just want you to know the virgin birth is an issue. This is a difficulty. This really is a difficulty, and there's no quick, easy answer to this. It's for this reason that the sect of the Jewish believers called the Evyonim rejected the virgin birth. And by the 3rd century, they had rejected the theology of the virgin birth and just said, no, his paternity is Joseph. As Asher Norman points out, this is important because of these 6 criteria, this is the only one that we have a shot at right now. You know, is to say, yes, he is a legitimate son of David. Now, the house of Joseph is certainly Davidic. I am okay with several solutions on this. I'm happy with the solution that I suggested, that this is actually some sort of miraculously is Joseph's through some sort of miraculous conception. I'm happy with the solution that it's irrelevant because of tribal adoption. I'm okay with that. I find that one a little bit harder, but I'm also very happy with the idea that Miriam is a daughter of the house of David as well, and that perhaps one of these genealogies does belong to her, or perhaps she has a different genealogy from David. I do know this, and Asher Norman points this out, this has been a problem for a long time, because we read in Titus 3:3 and 1 Timothy 1:4, Paul writing to Titus and Timothy and telling them to avoid endless disputes about genealogies. Endless disputes about genealogies. Now, I want to tell you why I think there are these endless disputes about genealogies regarding the birth of our Master. Because the brothers of our Master, like James, you know, these guys had no, there's no question that they're Davidic. There's no question. In fact, the grandsons of Jude, who wrote the book of Jude, ended up being arrested by the Roman government when they were hunting down the sons of David under the Emperor Domitian. Because they're Davidic, and it could be demonstrated that this was a Davidic family. So, but I want to read to you a little bit of stuff that you've never heard before. This is Julius Africanus.
Was that from the grandsons of Jude? Was that from Josephus?
No, Eusebius. Yeah. Julius Africanus is a 2nd century Gentile Christian born in the land of Israel, who apparently must have been Egyptian or something like that, with the name Africanus. But travels around, he becomes a traveling preacher and a historian sort of guy. Anyway, in the land of Israel, apparently, he had contact with some people called the Despoceni. Despoceni means the Lord's people. It's the family of the Master. So he had contact with the descendants of the family of Yeshua. This would be his brothers, his cousins. So I want to read to you a little bit about what he says about the Despoceni. I find my spot here. Okay, first of all, he gives us a really long, convoluted explanation of how the two genealogies, the one in Matthew and the one in Luke, actually work together, because these two families, the one in Matthew and the one in Luke, are intermarried by means of levirate marriages. I've tried to read it and figure it out before. I would really have to chart it out. Have you ever heard the song, I'm My Own Grandpa?
Yeah.
It's about like that. But then he tells us where he gets this crazy idea. And this is very interesting. He says, he talks about the rise of Herod the Great, and talks about him being an Edomian, an Edomite. And he says, as up to that time, the genealogies of the Hebrews have been registered in the public archives, and those, too, which were traced back to the proselytes. For, as example, to Achor the Ammonite and Ruth the Moabitess, and those who left Egypt along with the Israelites and intermarried with them. So he's saying there were genealogies going all the way back. Herod, knowing that the lineage of the Israelites contributed nothing to him, and goaded by the consciousness of his ignoble birth, that he was Edomite, burned the registers of the families. This he did, thinking that he would appear to be of noble birth if no one else could trace back his descent by public register to the patriarchs or proselytes and to that mixed race, the mixed multitude. A few, however, of the studious, having private records of their own, either by remembering the names or by getting at them in some other way from the archives, pride themselves in preserving the memory of their noble descent. And among these happened to be those already mentioned, called Despoceni, on account of their connection with the family of the Savior. And these, coming from Nazareth and Kokhba, just as an aside, when I read this passage, I realized these people, the brothers of the Master, were living in, we know they were in Nazareth, but what is Kokhba? What is Kokhba? It means star.
Yeah.
That's star. So you have these messianic prophecies of a branch will spring out of, you know, the Netzer. A branch will spring out of the stump of Jesse, right? So they named their village Nazareth. A star will rise out of Jacob. They named their village Kokhba. So I asked my brother, I said, do you know where any, is there any villages named Kokhba near Nazareth? So he looks it up and he says, yep. And I actually, Yeah, I actually went there. It was great. It's an Arab village now, but yeah, the Arab village preserves the name, even preserves the name in Arabic, an Arabic form of star. And as you drive into the village, there's this big metal star very cool. A village that was probably pioneered by a Davidic family. Anyway, these coming from Nazareth and Kokhba, Judean villages, to other parts of the country, set forth the above-named genealogy as accurately as possible from the Book of Days. Whether then the case stand thus or not, no one could discover a more obvious explanation, according to my own opinion, and that of any sound judge. And let this suffice us for the matter. Although it is not supported by testimony, because we have nothing more satisfactory or true to allege upon it. The gospel, however, in any case, states the truth. And now he gives us just a little bit more about these two genealogies. Matan, descended from Solomon, begat Jacob. Matan, dying, Melchi, descended from Natan, that's the other genealogy, begot Heli by the same wife. Yeah? Therefore, Heli and Jacob, from these two different genealogies, are uterine brothers. So they're brothers. Heli, dying childless, even though they're from two different families, they're stepbrothers, you could say. Heli, dying childless, Jacob raised up seed to him as a leveret and begat Joseph, his own son by nature, but the son of Heli by law. Whoa. Isn't that interesting? Thus, Joseph was the son of both. And so he marries these two genealogies through this tradition that he reportedly gets from the family of the master, the Despicini. But the genealogical work here is not without its own difficulties as well, because it's missing some of the names that we have in any case. Here's the point. Here's what I would have you take away from that. There were problems because the genealogical records had been destroyed by Herod. That is a completely believable story, that we know Herod had issues like that. And we know, for example, his slaughter of the innocents. Why? Because he was threatened. He killed his own sons because he was afraid they would take his throne. So he knows that, number one, he is... Oh, you know this story about Herod? He calls everyone in and he says to the Sanhedrin, he says, what does it mean when it says that you shall only set a Jewish king over you? And they say, it means that you have to be a Jew. And so he says, for giving me such a bad answer, I'm going to have you all put to death. And he calls in the guards, and they come in and they kill the whole Sanhedrin. You know, so this is Herod. And so the idea that Herod would have burned the genealogical records, which were kept in the temple, is completely plausible. So now, if that's the case, you can know that you're a Davidic family, but then try putting that together a generation later, saying, you know, we should what was the genealogy? Well, go ask Uncle Jude, you know. But then over here is Yossi saying, no, that's not it at all. It was, you know, and so it's very plausible that these genealogies are, you know, the apostles' best attempts but they're conflicting. So I don't have a problem, again, with conflicting genealogies. To me, this speaks more to the authenticity of our texts than it does to discredit them. All right, so that's about all I have to say about it, about the genealogies. Here's what Asher Norman concludes. He says, the flawed and contradictory genealogies in Luke and Matthew are extremely problematic, since genealogy is the only authentic messianic criteria that the Christian Bible claims that Jesus fulfilled. Jesus is eliminated from messianic consideration because of the myriad of errors and problems in both Matthew and Luke's genealogies. I disagree. Even if we had no genealogies at all, but only a strength of tradition, that would be sufficient. There is no one around today who has a verifiable genealogy who can take them all the way back to David. We'll never have a Messiah if a criteria is a foolproof, you know, verifiable genealogy. There's going to be no Messiah that can produce such a thing. However, there is this. Do you remember when the priests came back from Babylon, and some of them had lost their genealogical records? And then Ezra was asked, what should we do? Should we let them serve in the temple or not? Well, the problem is we don't know they're really priests. They don't have genealogies. And so Ezra decides, or was it Nehemiah? One of those guys. Ezra decides, we're not going to let them serve because we don't know. However, if a priest shows up with the Urim and the Thummim, so we can ask God directly, then we'll ask if they're legitimate priests, and that'll resolve the issue. So this is something that in Judaism is anticipated, that when Messiah comes, he will solve genealogical issues for everyone. So he'll be able to, you know, he'll go through the people of the Jewish people and say, you're a Simeonite, you're a Reubenite, because we have to have tribal identities in the Messianic era. So Messiah is, you know, going to sort these things out. By the same token, I think his own genealogy can be sorted out. You know, if we can't have a Messianic era without all 12 tribal identities, neither can we have a Messiah without a tribal identity from David. But the two things are related. Yes. I just think it's a fact of, I mean, we have messed up genealogies all through the Bible. We have we have contradicting genealogies in Chronicles and that don't match with this and that. I mean, it's not an unusual biblical problem to have. Genealogies are not, they're not a science in the Bible. All right, I think we're out of time, and we're probably not going to make it through the rest of this list. Then, what time is it? Yeah, we're out of time. The rest will go fast, and we can knock out the rest at the beginning of class next week, because the rest, it's just, he's right, he's right, he's right, he's right.